were examined and samples snipped and stored. Then they were unceremoniously plopped back into the cooling body cavity. It took about 10 minutes. "There are no other obvious anomalies," it said. "Nothing that would indicate the subject's age as a factor." Two hands held together the lips of the huge wound, while a third stapled it shut. "The brain will be studied in more detail, and then sectioned and preserved." It lifted the flap of scalp covering the face, and held her chin, moving it slightly back and forth. "Time of death was approximately 2.5 hours ago?" I supposed it was asking me. I looked at my wrist. "Yes, approximately." It seemed like minutes. "Rigor mortis is beginning, consonant with a measured depletion of adenosine triphosphate in the specimens examined. This is evidence of violent exertion just prior to death. Normally, the body would not be at this state until 4 to 6 hours after death." One of the men in green spoke up. "Is that variable affected by the Becker-Sendrick process?" "No, but it isn't a completely reliable indicator either among immortals or in the records we have from earlier times. It is just an observation." What could she have been struggling over, lying there in the darkness, strapped to a couch? "She didn't have much freedom of motion," I said. "At the time of death, she was in total immersion, virtual reality." "It may have been involuntary contractions in response to the stroke," the machine said. "It also happens in death by electrocution. I would suggest that the equipment be studied with that possibility in mind, although there were no burn marks on the skin. Virtual reality does involve the induction of electrical fields into the brain, but I have no record of anyone ever dying as a result of this." "Neither have we." "Of course not. The surgeon had access to all of our information. The currents involved are very small. Nevertheless, it would be sensible to check the equipment." While it was talking, the machine was slicing away at Alex's brain. My phone buzzed, and I went out into the corridor to take it. It was Kate. "How are you, Jake? That must have been awful." "I don't know yet." I was still numb. "You watched it?" "Everyone around here did. It's hard to read a face from the thumbnail picture, but I think she'd been crying, or maybe ill." "Do you think it was... could it have been the machine?" "The surgeon suggested it, but no. How many millions of people have done it without having a stroke?" "I know the math, but it's still scary." "Yeah. I needed time to think it through. Maybe we'll shut down the machine for a while, run tests. I haven't talked to anybody." That reminded me. "I don't know whether anyone sent the word to Earth yet. We ought to report and get an opinion. They have a million time machines running." A tall man dressed entirely in black came up to me. "Jacob, there's a meeting. Would you please come?" I nodded at him. "I have a meeting, sweet. Call you when I know what's happening." "Love you," she said, and clicked off. I followed the black man to a spiral staircase, and we went down 2 floors to the 1G level. I asked him what the meeting was about, which I suppose was an inane question. He answered with a shrug, "Dying in your machine." The meeting room was a bright atrium full of real tropical flowers. There were 4 people sitting at a table big enough for 8 or 10. One was the medic, Desmond, and one was Cleo Bannister, the coordinator of Sanitas. The other 2 introduced themselves as Kiri and Mark, no title or function. They rarely used last names here. Bannister was a big woman who'd chosen an appearance around 50, 10 years older than mine. Before she even spoke, I'd resolved not to defer to her. "Alex was one of ours," she said. "But as far as we can tell, she never told anyone what she would want done with her body, if she died." "Well, that's not odd," I said. "Have you done that? I haven't." "I have now," she said, "after watching the operation. I would want to be incinerated."
"Cremated, they say," Mark said.
Bannister nodded.
"Of course, I couldn't assume that Alex would want the same thing."
Everybody was looking at me. I guess I was the outside authority. Each of them knew how the others felt.
I don't know of any established protocol. Bannister shook her head in agreement. Having the body burned, I don't know, I suppose it would take a lot of energy.
An unwanted memory rushed back.
Body's mostly water. When we did it on Earth after the war, it took a lot of gasoline and wood.
We should bury her, Kiri said. Return her to the soil.
That was something we talked about in Mech, I said. Have you seen the survey results?
They hadn't.
It's funny, a lot of people are phobic about that. Our people, anyhow. Her molecules would move into the food chain. It would be cannibalism, involuntary and inescapable.
That's ridiculous, Bannister said. Earth's soil is full of dead people. Nobody cares.
Kiri laughed.
We eat each other's shit recycled. It's probably full of little bits of our bodies.
I didn't say it was reasonable, but most of us voted for space.
Just throw her out the airlock? Kiri said.
Throw it. It's not a woman anymore, Mark said.
That's wasting resources, Bannister said. If you cremated her and recycled the ashes, there would be no loss.
We'd talked about that aspect. The mass of one human being is insignificant. If you want to return her to the biosphere, fine, but it's a philosophical rather than a practical matter. The body's mostly water, and among the five ships, we leak that much every few days.
Most of them wound up agreeing with the space position, though I became uncomfortable with it myself. It seemed so lonely. Granted, there was nothing there that was actually Alex, just some bones and spoiling meat. It felt inhumane to leave her behind, freezing solid in the interstellar cold.
You could do the equations, of course, and see that she wouldn't be standing still out there. We'd draw away from her, but she'd still be hurtling toward Beta Hydrii 1,000 times faster than a rifle bullet. When we eventually flipped around to decelerate, her remains would fly toward us with increasing relative speed and ultimately barrel past us long after we'd reached our destination. Whether or not spacing the body was a good idea, making it a public event definitely was not. Anyone should have been able to predict what would happen, definitely including me. She had a sister in Ars who had elected not to come. It would have been good if her lover, Francisco, had also stayed away. They sealed the remains in a white plastic bag and put it in the airlock. The air left in the lock puffed out when they opened the door, sending Alex gently on her final journey. 2 external lights were on, and if the bag had been an inert mass, it would have drifted slowly away as we accelerated. It was full of room-temperature meat and organs, though. They outgassed, and the bag exploded. Then the naked body, slowly turning, itself swelled up, and the staples popped out, leaving a trail of guts that bloated and froze solid in seconds. Francisco started to wail, and although they sedated him, he was still sobbing uncontrollably when I left 20 minutes later. It was not a sight that anyone would ever forget, her tongue pushing out past her perfect teeth, her beautiful, mismatched eyes. 1933. 4 years later, New York is a different planet. I'm in observer mode and glad of it. It's not a year you would like to have been a part of. We have more than 100 times as many clients for 1929, for those months when the world was perfect and no one heard the gathering storm. In 1933, most of the world was hitting bottom. Mass starvation in Russia and the Ukraine. Hitler elected chancellor and given dictatorial powers. Dachau, the first concentration camp, begins its work of extermination, while all German books by Jews are thrown into bonfires. Thousands die in a Cuban revolt, a Japanese tsunami, a massacre in Iraq, Kurds killing Christians. A couple of months ago, before Roosevelt was inaugurated, a lunatic stood up on a rickety chair and fired 5 shots at him, so close he could have hit him with a rock, but he missed. All five shots hit other people, including Chicago's Mayor Chernak, who eventually died. Some suspected that Chernak was the actual target and it was a mob hit, but the assassin was put to death by electrocution 5 weeks later, a speed record that held for more than 100 years, and after that there was nothing but speculation. Roosevelt turned out to be such a linchpin of the 20th century, as important in his own way as Hitler or Stalin, what would the world have been like if he'd died that day? In spite of all the violence and poverty and insanity, there was a thread of optimism in America. At least you would finally be able to get a legal drink again, and millions of people would enlist in the NRA and have something like a job. The Chicago World's Fair was a celebration of a century of progress. Wiley Post flew around the world in a week, and the Boeing 247, the first airliner, began service for those who could afford it. One Armstrong invented FM radio, and another made a hit of the sunny "I've Got the World on a String." I was standing at the just-completed Rockefeller Center in the middle of a cheering crowd. A parade of 100,000 Jews and Jewish sympathizers, led by General John F. O'Ryan, was marching in defiance of Hitler. They don't even know about Dachau yet. War is more than 5 years away, but the air is heavy with hate. But no background smell. Whatever was wrong in 1929 was still wrong here. There was no actual need to stay longer, since I'd found out what I needed to know, but I thought I'd walk around and look for other anomalies. It was a nice spring day, anyhow. I walked up 45th Street toward 8th Avenue, the theater district. A lot of the small buildings would still be there, in the shadows of skyscrapers and slabs, when Mother and I would walk into town 125 years later. End of side two. To continue, change side selector switch and turn the cassette over.